Welcome to the Artman Talks podcast. This is the first episode. In this episode, we speak with Kevin Johnson, consultant at SecureIdeas.net and instructor at the SANS Institute. In this second part, we're taking a look at common vulnerabilities and attacks, and especially why you should be very careful about your password. Let's move on a little bit and talk about some of the common vulnerabilities and some of the common attacks. So in your line of work, when you're working with a new client, what are some of the biggest problems that you come across most often?
Well, I'll tell you that I was just talking to a couple of friends of mine, a couple of hours ago, and this topic came up. Is we talk a lot about the cool, neat exploit techniques that we can come up with, but the majority of our attacks, the majority of the things we find are simple misconfigurations or bad choices. For example, one of the most common passwords we find is the word password followed by the number one.
Okay.
And we regularly log into servers. I was just, a good friend of mine, Tom Esten, was just saying how, in the last few tests he's done, that's been the type of password he's found.
There was a blog post a while back. Some guy, he was able to use an iPhone app that he had created to basically take a look and see what kind of passwords they were using to access the app, to access the actual application. I think it was called Big Brother or something. And from there, he was able to extrapolate the most common passwords for iPhone users using that data, assuming that the Big Brother password was the same as the iPhone password. And it was amazingly easy, just like 123 or, 1111.
Yeah, he was grabbing the passcode to unlock the device with the one you're talking about. And,
okay.
And in that case, you're absolutely right. They were very, very weak passwords. I will say, though, that one of the main reasons for them being such weak passwords is the media. The media that the person is using, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a phone with a touch screen. It's really not, for most people, not designed around the idea of creating very long, complex passwords. But when you look at things like Ron Bose's collection of compromised passwords, Ron has regularly gone out and collected passwords that were, the Rock U attack where they pulled 500,000 passwords or whatever the number was. Ron has collected those into a single location, and you find very commonly that the passwords are things like password 1234 or 1234579 or I love, or people's names.
Right.
And it's because people don't really understand the necessity of having complex passwords.
I mean, do you think it's kind of a psychological reason? Like maybe there's a disconnect between the physicality of the thing versus like the virtualness of computers, and so people feel like because it's virtual, because it has less tangibility, it's more secure perhaps, or like less real or something like that?
That might be. I also think part of it is a disconnect in why we set them.
Okay.
Right? For a very long time, security has basically said you need to have a difficult password, but we've never really shown people what the threat is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I regularly talk to people and they don't understand why their password is important, right? You get told things by people all the time of answers like, well, yeah, but who would want to attack me? And it's like, well, it's not that they're attacking you, they're attacking the account,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's where we find the disconnect. Is it, is it really going to happen to me? Nah.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And can you talk about, because you were talking about how people don't understand how important it is to set a password or a good password, but can you talk about why it is important? And I guess why a complex password is important?
Well, you have to keep in mind that a password's goal is to slow me down. My job is to attack your organization, right? And so if I need to get in, I'm going to go after that account. And if your password is the word password or QWERTY, right, the first five characters on the keyboard, it's going to take me seconds to guess that. And once I breach that one piece of defense, your network or your system or your organization is wide open. Mm. The password being complex will slow me down. Now, is it going to stop me from getting in? No, because given sufficient time, I'm going to be able to break any password assigned because it's a finite character set.
So right? you're talking specifically about brute force, just running the combinations.
Yes, yes. I'm going to be able to guess that password at some point. Now, the goal is for you to either lock out the account so I can't get into it after I brute force it too far, or have it take long enough for me to try to brute force it that either I'm going to go somewhere else or your infrastructure is going to detect the attack and act to block me.
Yeah, yeah. And because also, I mean, like, if your password is longer and more complex and someone is trying to brute force it, well, it's going to take a long time. I mean, it could... I mean, as you said, I mean, there is a finite set, but I mean, the longer the set, the more complicated, the more time it's going to take for an attacker.
Exactly. And that's why we say, you know, use a passphrase. Instead of typing something like, you know, we have people who say password, then you have the people who think, well, this will be okay. I'll change the A to a 4 and the O to a 0, and nobody will figure that out. And yeah, well, we do. And you know, or people say, well, you know, I'll change it all to symbols and stuff like that. But then you get to a point where your password is so complex that what's going to happen? You're going to write it down. And then all I have to do is walk over to your desk and pick up the Post-it note, which, yes, in 2011, we still pick up Post-it notes that have passwords stuck to them.
Mm-hmm.
So what I recommend, is, as do many security professionals, use a passphrase. Use a sentence, right? I really love my wife. My kids are great, whatever, right? And if it's capitalized correctly and punctuated correctly and spaced correctly, while that's a very simple password for you to remember, how hard is it for you to remember to type, I love my wife? It's long enough and complex enough that it will take me a very long time to break it.
Yeah. Okay, that makes complete sense. 'Cause I think, like, I use LastPass with my Chrome and Firefox, and every time that I ask for it to generate a password, it'll be this long string of capital letters, small letters, and numbers and stuff, which I can never remember. And so when it's time for me to log into a different computer, I'm like, oh crap, what's my password? And then I have to go to my netbook and look it up, and so on and so on. But yeah, it seems like a really, really good idea. Make it, I guess, a little bit more human, perhaps, so you can remember it, but still complex, so people can't necessarily guess it, or at least guess it correctly.
Exactly. And if you use something like, because we recommend obviously a different password for every website that you access, if you're going to use a sentence, heck, your passphrase could be something like, this is my Facebook password, period. This is my Twitter password, period. This is my, right? It's a different password for every single site. Now, with a case like that, if I break your Twitter password, I can pretty much guess what your Facebook password's going to be. Or, you know, but at that point, I'm targeting you specifically.
Right.
That would enable you to have a different password, and when you go log into the site, you'll remember it.
Okay.
Or something else I've seen people do. This website is blue. This website is green. And it's based on the look and feel of the website. Of course, if they ever change the color scheme of the website, you won't remember your password, but that's a different problem.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, it's definitely some good advice in terms of passwords, but are there any other, I guess, other vulnerabilities that you come across, some other common vulnerabilities?
Oh, yeah. It's very common to find systems that haven't been patched in, you know, a year or 2 years or even longer. I as recently as, you know, January and February of this year, I tested a network that had systems that had not been patched in 5, 6, or 7 years.
How does that happen? I mean, people just forget?
Well, I think how it happens is it's not important to that organization, right? We find very often, and this isn't just a large organization problem. We see this in small organizations also, where Joe sets up a server, puts it over in the corner, and then either he forgets about it or he leaves the company and Sue takes over managing the infrastructure and doesn't know that server's over there. Commonly will attack and exploit a server, get onto the machine, use that machine to gain access to the rest of the network, and then when we're talking to our contact there, right, our client, we'll say, well, we compromised server B, and they'll be like, well, we don't have a server with that name. And it's like, well, no, you do. I'm on it. And sure enough, it's a server on their network that they just had forgotten about.
But it seems like it should be pretty hard to forget about. I mean, like, we're talking about like a remote server, perhaps, or just like it's just a machine that's sitting there that no one...
Imagine a data center that has 200 machines in it, right? As you're going through and patching those 200 machines, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying this is okay, right? But as you're are you really going to remember every single machine, and did you get every single machine? Because keep in mind that many IT shops are still manually patching their systems. They haven't implemented systems or software to automate that process. Mm. So they're literally logging into all 200 machines they own every month and patching it.
Wow. Okay. So, but there is software. There is something out there to make it easier.
Oh, absolutely. There, you know, Microsoft themselves have released, you know, Windows Update can be automated. They've released things like the SCCM, which is a software configuration management tool. You know, Apple has tools like this, IBM. There's an entire market of tools that are designed around managing your systems. But in most cases, they cost money.
Exactly.
And when you're talking about a shop that, you know, IT is almost always a cost center. Very few organizations make money by having the best IT infrastructure possible.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, they make money by selling insurance or selling widgets. The IT infrastructure is a cost.
Right.
That supports that.
Yeah, it's just the cost, right, of doing business, right? It's just part of your infrastructure.
Well, we always talk about it's the cost of doing business, but when you go to the CIO and say, I need another $20,000 to get this software, the answer is going to be that's not a cost we want of doing business.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, because it's not cheap necessarily. And that was the second part of the first episode of the Artman Talks podcast. Stay tuned for more.